one more event to go on the 2021 calendar year, and it turns out a must-watch event. Hi, and welcome back in the Grill Room with Bob, and I'm so proud to be with my longtime buddy, Jay Randolph Jr. Jay, the unexpected, well, it seems to just keep happening.
Tiger Woods is back and playing in an event. We'll see how he goes about it. But the first time Tiger's played in an event, the PNC Championship, the father-son, I think everybody is just excited to have him back and playing. And obviously this event, which, you know, caught a lot of attention last year with Charlie and all that, it's great that he can come back here. You know, what does it mean? I'm not sure, but it's going to be great to see him playing golf.
You know, I mean, it wasn't too long ago, Jay, you and I were lamenting the fact that, well, that's the last time we're going to see Tiger Woods on the golf course, and now we're going to get that privilege again. Now, we don't know what's going to happen. Yes, he's been practicing. Yes, he's been hitting some balls, which, you know, indicates that his swing is pretty good. They have granted him permission to ride in the cart, which makes all the sense in the world. And to add a little spice to it, Jay, he's going to be testing out a brand new Bridgestone golf ball.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any expectations. I think he's going to be testing himself a little bit. And I think, you know, he's going to have fun with Charlie and whoever his playing partners are. But when you knew he could start swinging again, you know, he's going to do this until he believes he can't anymore. Now, whether that's going to mean, Bob, we're only going to see him at, you know, maybe 6 to 10 events a year. I mean, heck, he was only playing, you know, 14 to 16. I don't know. I mean, maybe anyway, he said that he may have been doing that anyway, if he'd have stayed healthy, you know, looking at his career and focusing on the bigger events. I don't know. I just do know that my son, who's involved in the game, gotten involved in the game playing wise the last couple of years and is becoming a little golf geek himself, is just so excited that he gets to see Tiger play. And that means there's people all over the country, like you and me as well, that are going to be tuning in essence, just to see Tiger. But it's a stellar group of people playing.
And to give all those Tiger fans a little shot of hope, just go back to 1953, Ben Hogan. Literally almost killed in a bus crash. Many said he'd never walk again. Well, he went on to win major championships. Is that the future for Tiger Woods? We don't know, but this is a glance into the future, what's coming up this weekend in the father and son. And Jay, what a great point you made. 20 partnerships in the field and certainly some stellar players.
At least one of the teams has a major champion on their team. I mean, it's just majors smothered in majors. Last year, JT and his dad, Mike, a golf professional, won it. You've got former tennis star Peter Korda playing with his daughter, LPGA star Nelly Korda. You got the Dailies. You got Big John and Little John. And
which one is the Little John? Wait a minute, Jay.
That's a good question. That's a very good question, Bob, but Little John's shown a little promise already in his freshman campaign at University of Arkansas. Duval is playing with his son, Braden. You got Aldo Furyk and his son, you know, on and on. Gary Player, the world traveler, the Black Knight, traveled more than any other human other than an astronaut. He and his grandson, Jordan, are playing. South Africa also represented with Nick Price and his son, Greg. And they're two first-timers. We mentioned Nelly Korda earlier, and Henrik Stenson, the 2016 Open Championship. Him and his son, Carl, are playing.
And, of course, Bubba Watson playing with his father-in-law, Wayne Ball. That should be interesting. And going to be a little sentimental, Jay, with Tom Watson. He's taken some time away from golf after losing his lovely wife, Hillary. But Tom's coming back now. I had the pleasure of knowing Hillary quite well, and she was just a lovely person. And our condolences still to Tom Watson. I think it's a great thing he's coming back to golf. Look to see him play well. Vijay Singh's going to be there with his son Cass and Rich Beam's son Michael. So as you can tell, every pairing has a major winner as part of its team. That is, of course, the rules for this event.
Well, and the other thing, Bob, they're going to have to go low. I mean, this is not best ball or you know, two balls combined. This is scrambled. There'll be some low numbers. It should be a lot of fun. And we were talking about majors. Dottie Pepper, a two-time major winner on the LPGA Tour, now a fantastic CBS golf broadcaster on the PGA Tour. She's written a new book that focuses on her development in the game of golf with the guidance and help from Mr. George Pulver. It's called Letters to a Future Champion, My Time with George Pulver. It's a fascinating book. Dottie's development from a youngster to a star, an LPGA champion, one of the grittiest, guttiest players you'll ever find. It lends itself like a roadmap for an aspiring young player. And my man, the voice, Bob Bubka, had a chance to catch up with Dottie. Wonderful gal. Here's their conversation.
I want to begin way back when, I think, Dottie. You know, golf certainly has been the cornerstone of your life. Would you share with our listeners how it all began and of course, about your father, Don Pepper, a retired Major League Baseball player, and the part he played?
Thanks for having me join you. And, yeah, my dad was a pretty big part of how I got into the game, because he, like many people who left baseball, picked up the game of golf, not only for activity, but also to kind of fulfill their competitive need. That didn't go away when you're major league contracted. So his mom had taken up the game, dad took up the game, and it really became a family affair from there. And, you know, dad, even when he left baseball and the family turkey farm closed, he opened on part of the many, many acres that my grandfather had the farm on. He opened the driving range in a par 29, or kind of a short course, par 3 course, where the longest hole was, I think, 120 yards. So it also, you know, it's really turned into his income for a while. And it's where I ultimately met George Pulver, who would become my mentor when my dad couldn't really take me any deeper into the game with the knowledge that he had of it.
Let me ask you this. Explain to our listeners, you know, you say the name Mr. Pulver, and he's certainly well known within the golf world, but obviously there's got to be listeners that are not familiar with that name. Give us his background and why you were so excited to be able to work with him.
Well, his background began quite literally 1898 here in Saratoga Springs in upstate New York. He was born, went to Saratoga High School, where I went to high school, where my parents went to high school, fought in World War One, came back injured, as a child, before he went to the war and before he graduated from Saratoga High School, he got into golf by being a caddy, as so many people of that era did. And he made 15 cents per round. And if he lost a golf ball, it cost him 15 cents. So he became a pretty good ball hawk for those sort of wages and for those sort of penalties. But when he came back from the war, he was a Cub reporter for the Saratogian. And he was the only one on the staff that had any background in golf when an assignment came through and he was assigned to it. And in completing that assignment, he struck up a friendship with Seymour Dunn, who had connections back to really the beginnings of golf in Scotland. And Seymour and his father had come to the United States full-time in the golden era of golf. And Mr. Pulver was one of those who intersected with them. And he became a golf professional and kind of cut him in that mold and taught down in New York City at a driving range during the winter, went south for the summers, but ultimately was a founding member of the Northeastern New York PGA Championship and of playing quality, which I found out while I was writing the book because he never talked about his playing career. Good enough to have taken down Tom Creevy when Tom was the reigning PGA champion, national PGA champion, and taking him down quite solidly in an event in this area, in the Northeastern New York Open. So he left a big print on golf in this area, but really even beyond that.
Hey, Daddy, let me ask you this. Do you know if Mr. Pulver ever met Harvey Pienick?
He never mentioned him, but there are ties certainly to the way, or similarities similar to the way they both taught and the way their students really sort of sponged the information out of them. And that's really why I had Kathy Whitworth write the foreword, or asked her to write the foreword for the book, because it was so much like the relationship she and Tom Kite, Ben Crenshaw, and others had with Harvey.
Yeah, I was, I think, probably not officially, but unofficially, the worst pupil that Harvey Pienick ever had, because he was unable to improve my golf game. But what a gentleman, and what a pleasure to have had contact with him and to become friends with his son, Tinsley. Boy, I'll tell you what, Mr. Pulver's in good company if he's in Harvey Pienick's class, and I'm sure he is. All right, now let's get to Dottie Pepper. And you overcame two of the biggest mountains I think anybody could ever achieve. First, you went from an exceptional golfer to winning major championships, and you won two of them. And also, along those same lines, you came from somebody that was extremely shy, didn't really like the microphone, to now just a superstar for CBS, and you get to work alongside probably the biggest gentleman of all time in sports broadcasting, and I'm talking about Jim Nantz. Talk about, first, overcoming the shyness. Well, let's go to golf first. Talk about, you know, from your humble beginnings in Saratoga to becoming a winner of two major championships, 17 wins. I mean, an incredible career.
Well, I did come from really humble beginnings, and that was sort of why I think I ended up with Mr. Pulver, because I reached out for him trying to find tournaments in this area that I could afford to play in, because the whole deal, even through college playing summer golf, summer amateur golf, was if I could drive, I could play, because there wasn't any extra money for that. I've worked in my family's ski shop. I played piano for weddings. I did everything to try to make sure I had enough money to get through just to have the exposure to play and compete in tournaments and junior and amateur golf. And that was the first connection with Mr. Pulver from a letter writing standpoint, which was the basis of the books, was reaching out to him for his help trying to find tournaments to play in. Because the rule was, if I couldn't drive, I couldn't play, and I really needed help finding places to play that I would be able to get to. In fact, when I ended up being low amateur at the Women's Open in 84, it qualified me, or gave me the exemption to get into the Women's Amateur in Seattle. And my grandparents, I think, ponied up the money for me to get to the West Coast. And the following year, as a result of that, I was invited to play in the Dyna, the ANA, the now Chevron Championship. And I had to turn it down because I just didn't have the money to go. So I think there's certainly extra pride on my behalf in winning that tournament twice, that championship twice, because I couldn't play when I had first qualified for it. But I still don't like my voice. So maybe that was part of the shyness about the microphone, but Judy Rankin helped me really get over that by the simple thing that she does every time she goes on the air. Well, there are two simple things. One, you talk about what you know, and I feel like I do know the game of golf all right. And secondly, say what you want to say, what you need to say in as few words as possible. well, that doesn't leave the microphone in your hands for very long. So I can deal with that.
Well, those are two wonderful suggestions. And getting advice from Judy Rankin is like taking a golf lesson from Jack Nicklaus. So you're certainly at the very top. But, boy, how gratifying. And just me hearing you say there, you know, the diner, you didn't have the money to even get to tee it up. And then later on, you go on and win it not only once, but you win it twice. That is just simply amazing, Dottie.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a lesson. And part of why I wrote this book, too, was to show families, show parents that, you know, might not have a lot of money and they have a gifted or driven child, that there are ways for them to really live out their dreams and the way they can get to the top. And it doesn't happen just necessarily because mom and dad have deep pockets and can put kids on planes and go to academies and that sort of experience. And in fact, there were a lot of kids that I played junior golf with and college golf with that had the attitude, well, I only have to do this for so much longer because then I'm gone from the house and my scholarship's gone and I don't have to play golf anymore. So I know part of the reason that I wanted to write this book and write it in this manner was to maybe give a little hope to some families who aren't as well off and give them some guidance of the way Mr. Pulver helped me not fall into a lot of the potholes that were out there, potholes of burnout and not having a backup plan, of not having an education, golf being the only thing in your world. I so benefited from that.
All right, let's get to the book, Letters to a Future Champion, which I think is a fabulous read. Forward, as you mentioned earlier, done by Kathy Whitworth. Anything that has Kathy's name attached to it is in a level of its own. What can youngsters and aspiring stars learn from your book, from Mr. Pulver?
Well, I think it is that golf's a kind of a lifelong journey, and it's important not to get pigeonholed into thinking about golf in just one manner, that I'm going to be a tour player, when there are so many other avenues that golf can help, can be part of a network, that can be the basis of education, that can take you through really your entire life with the people and places that it takes you. And that was really, really important to him. He had three children, two of which played very, very good and competitive golf. His wife played competitive golf. And, you know, the places that golf has allowed them to get to, and the middle daughter, who was, I hear from at least twice a week, she's 87 years old now and still plays golf every week in Washington, D.C., and plays actually more than once a week. So she's still very much in the game. And the family was so supportive of it. And it's the foundation that Mr. Pulver's kids have that continue to reinforce why it was so important to do this. So to have those networks, to have those connections, to have those people experiences. And really for him to say that, you know, when you're feeling like, for example, if you're getting burned out, if golf's not fun anymore, it's okay to pack the clubs away for a while and encourage you to do that. And when the game starts tugging at your heart again, then you go back. There were life lessons woven through all of the letters that I saved. I saved every one of them. And I mean, today I think you would actually be considered a life coach.
So it's even more important and bigger than the ability to play golf, the ability to live your life that brings fulfillment, joy, and all the things that come with it. When you meet, let's say, an 18-year-old girl that's about to go off to college, pretty good credentials, nothing great, what advice would you give to her?
To never not pigeonhole yourself and not think that whatever you think you want to do going in as a freshman in college will be what you ultimately discover is your passion, because those 4 years or however long you're in college, they're really about figuring out who you are and how you can best fulfill expectations of other people. how you can live up to what a coach, a team, professors, roommates, suite mates, all of that ask of you, and how your life changes as you're around these new people all the time. I would tell them to never shut a door, to have a well-balanced education, go where your passion is, and continue to be curious, because you do. You go to college as a 17 or 18-year-old, and you think, well, this is what I'm going to do. And all of a sudden, there's other interests develop where you just really don't love what you thought you loved, and don't feel like you've gotten yourself down that road so far that you can't pivot.
Would you agree with me that the opportunity now for females in the world of golf and professional golf is far greater than it's ever been in its history?
No question. And it's not like again, people think about golf and they think about, it's professional golf. The world of professional golf is very healthy, but the world of golf with females in it, period, I think is as healthy as it's ever been. And think about the women that are getting on the air, even behind the camera, more women working in broadcasting, more working in sports marketing, with more working in college athletics, in big time programs and at high level within those programs. I think it's probably the best time that it's ever been for women in the industry in general.
And that's such good news. I mean, because it has been a closed shop for way too long. Mm-hmm. And I started out working a lot with Nancy Lopez, and golly, I mean, if this whole world was full of Nancy Lopez's, this would be a pretty good world.
I mean, Judy talked to, there's a section in the book that Judy did a Zoom call with me, and I had it transcribed, and we just talked for an hour. I had a bunch of questions, and then the conversation just kind of rolled, and we ended up talking about the 2008 U.S. Open at Torrey Pines, and Judy was working for ESPN, and the early rounds coverage on Thursday and Friday. And it was the first time the USGA had put the number one, number two, number three player in the world out in the same grouping. And it's Tiger, Phil, and Adam Scott. And she recalled looking around at some point during the round that there were three women out there with that group calling golf on different platforms. And I know, because I picked up the coverage when it flipped over to NBC that afternoon, I had to pick up Judy's spot, and I know I felt the pressure of it. How cool is this?
Yeah.
So, Maureen Medill was the other one. She was doing stuff for the BBC or for Sky, and she was doing radio, and Jane Crafter was doing it for another ESPN platform. So that's pretty remarkable. And you think about the USGA had done something that they'd never done before, and it turns out that there are women calling every platform for that group.
How can people get letters to a future champion?
Well, I sort of did things step by step the way Mr. Pulver did, and I kept things small, so it's all going through my own website, dottiepepper.net, which is another lesson learned. I didn't know anything about running a website or a Shopify account or doing international shipping or anything like that. So this has all been a journey to I guess it's expanded my wisdom or my just sort of my experience level. And also they're in all the PGA Tour superstores now, and in the Northshire bookstore here in Saratoga Springs. They also have, they're also web-based, so it's northshire.com, but dottiepepper.net is the primary place to find it. And I also would be hesitant not to bring up that 10% of everything goes back to a group here in Saratoga Springs called the Saratoga War Horse that takes veterans that are coming back from serving us with PTSD issues and puts them through a program with off-track equine thoroughbreds. And all of it is covered. It is all free of charge, including their travel. And we've made a huge difference. We've just crossed the $10,000 mark to be able to give back to the veterans. And mostly because Mr. Pulver was a veteran that came home injured.
Well, there are many great champions that have gone around the track. A great champion that has strolled up and down the fairway and done it in style not only as a player, but as a broadcaster. One and only Dottie Pepper cannot thank you enough for taking time out. Great luck with the book. As soon as somebody reads it, they're going to tell a friend that's going to tell a friend that's going to tell a friend. This is certainly well worth reading. It's not only going to bring you knowledge, but it's going to bring almost a game plan for how you can advance in whatever category you want to excel in. Dottie Pepper, thank you so much.
Thank you, Bob.
Well, we want to thank Dottie for her time. What a fantastic lady she is for the game of golf. And you can get that book at DottiePepper.net. We'll be back next week to wrap up the year and the PNC Championship. Until then, happy holidays from myself and Bob Bubka.
Don't forget, if you'd like to drop us a line or give us your thoughts or opinion on the show, we'd love to hear from you. I'm STL Golf Geek on Twitter, while Bob, the VOG, the voice of golf, Bob Bubka, VOG. Check us out on Twitter.